It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. Fred, a couple of the questions that you sent me sort of answered themselves over the course of the last few days. And we'll start with one of those. But I will. People will just have to take my word for this, that my answer to this question didn't change since last night. And the way you phrased it was, do we like Drew Pomeranz more or less than we did a week ago? And my answer to that was a pretty easy less even before last night. I mean, I wasn't that crazy about him going towards the end of the year anyway, just because there's no history of him holding up over at this level over a full season. So I probably would have been looking to sell if I had him anyway. But moving from San Diego, the non-DH league, a very friendly ballpark, to the DH league, a much less friendly ballpark, and a division with a couple of teams that just chew up left-handed pitchers, I can't think of a move that really hurts a guy's fantasy value less. And so I guess I'm sort of assuming you agree with me here. So I guess what I'm going to ask is, do you see a silver lining? Do you see reason to be more optimistic than I am about Pomeranz? Because I'm a full sell on him right now.
No, I'm in total agreement. I was a big jump off even before that start. And when he was traded and, you know, we put out our fantasy spin into the article, I was pretty negative about it. Not negative about him as a pitcher, but basically the reasons you mentioned, you know, the rising innings total this season. And now that he's on a contender, you know, like had he stayed with San Diego, maybe they give him some additional breaks, skip a start here and there, kind of pace him some shorter starts. Like, he went to Boston for them to make the postseason and for him to be a big part of it. So, you know, they're going to run him out there. He's going to have to hold up and in pressure situations. I don't like that fit. I don't, as you mentioned, I don't like him in the American League. Even the Rays lineup is good against lefties, you know, and then the Blue Jays, the Orioles, those are scary lineups. Between the innings and the trade, like, I think he's a big sell. Now, I was really surprised the couple days after that where a lot of prominent fantasy writers were saying they didn't mind the move because Boston was such a good team. And to me, it's just not worth it. If I was a Pomeranz owner, I'd be happy that some other sites were saying he hasn't lost his value because I think there's still a window to trade him for a lot.
One kind of subtle factor, but I think it also plays in here. And you sort of noted, look, the Red Sox are in a pennant race. They're expecting a lot from this guy. They gave up a significant prospect to get him. The other thing that factors in and is that the Red Sox bullpen is utterly gutted right now. They're down so many guys. They brought in Ziegler, and even so, they are down a bunch of guys. And so you got to figure that they are going to err on the side of leaving guys in, especially the guy they just brought in to sort of be their stabilizer in the rotation. You got to figure that they're going to err on the side of leaving him in that couple extra batters. And, again, I just don't think that's what you want with this guy. There are some starters where you say, well, yeah, leave him in a couple extra batters, that's a couple more strikeouts for me. But if I have him on my fantasy team, I want his team to be as careful as possible to manage not only his innings but his matchups. It may turn out well, but I would rather be betting the other side of that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think owners should look through your standings, find that owner who really needs strikeouts, sell him on his strikeout rate because he has a great strikeout rate this season. You know, get an owner who really needs strikeouts, get them to buy in, and then trade him you should be able to trade him still for a valuable hitter, you know, a top-tier closer if that's what you're in the market for. I still think there's a good window there, even despite, like, a rough first start. I mean, it's one start. I mean, if I had felt great about it, one start wouldn't have swayed me, and the start was against the National League team on top of it all. So, I think the sell window is still open, but it might not be in, say, 2 weeks. Like, if there's two more struggling starts, I'm not saying there will be right away. My concerns are just as much for like the second half of August and September as they are maybe for the next month. But that's a big chunk of what's left in the season.
Yeah, absolutely. A guy that's not on your notes, but you just reminded me of when you talk about selling on the strikeout rate. Really nice start yesterday from Chris Archer. 11 strikeouts, 2 runs, 4 hits in Denver. That's 2 out of his last 4, very good. A third, pretty good. Look, he leads the AL in strikeouts, which is amazing. He also leads the AL in walks, so maybe we should start calling him Nuke. But I'm still not entirely sure what to make of him, but I like him so much. He's a guy I watch. Do you think maybe there's one last buy low on him as a guy maybe finally start? I mean, the ability is so high. He's got two double-digit strikeout games in his last four, but his ERA is still at 4.6. Which side of that would you rather be on right now?
Yeah, I'm still not really a buy on Archer. I've just, you know, looking through his game log this year, like there are some good starts, and that's when you think about the buy low window, but then they're often followed up by the four or five run outings. So I'm still not really sold on him getting everything back together. I think, yeah, I wouldn't really be a buy on him. If I was an Archer owner, I might even try to sell him based on the strikeout total and then the impressive start at Coors Field, and maybe try to sell that he's someone who's kind of coming around right now and could be a big difference maker. The one time I will say that I would buy on him, you know, if I was an owner mid-tier in my league, really needed strikeouts, you know, going to take a chance, you know, boomer bust type pitcher, he's your guy. You know, just like we were talking about with Pomerantz, you know, we don't love him, but he is that boomer bust type pitcher for the stretch run. And, you know, either one of those guys, if they got hot, could, like, really dramatically move you up in the standings.
The difference to me there is that I would be absolutely shocked if Pomerantz turns in a run of six or eight dominant starts in a row. I just don't, between the pitcher to me being a good pitcher but not a front of the rotation pitcher and the circumstances, whereas if Chris Archer over his next eight starts racked up, you know, 60 strikeouts, 10 walks and a 2 ERA, I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. So I think the difference there is that he does still have, to me at least, and look, I'm a longtime shameless Archer honk, I admit this, but to me there is still, even if it's a slight, even if it's a 5 or 10%, that there is the reward there. I think that Pomerantz, the risk-reward, the potential reward is lower. I think the potential reward for Archer is still as high as nearly anybody around.
Yeah, no, with the strikeout rate, you know, it is really high. My guess is you could maybe get more for Pomerantz on the trade market, though, right now. I mean, his whip is about 20 points lower. His ERA is almost two full runs lower. Maybe that makes
him
better by low.
I agree. And that's why I'm saying I would rather – I'm selling Pomerantz if I've got him and I'm not giving up anything significant to get him. If somebody is motivated, if somebody is tired of Archer, if somebody is at that point where – They are tired of getting their ratios killed. They're tired of the walks. I'm willing to be the person who takes that chance if I have that need. If I have that risk-reward need, that's a guy I'm very interested in.
Yeah, and I like the theory of, you know, there's no prize for finishing in fifth place. So if you're sitting there right now, you know, find a pitcher. You know, maybe your guy's Archer. Mine's probably a different guy, but find a pitcher you believe in. Go all in on that pitcher. Buy low, and then, you know, if you're wrong, maybe you finish eighth instead of fifth, whatever. And if you're right, maybe you get up in near the top of the league.
Dylan Bundy is a guy who I watched. I mean, look, a lot of us have watched for a long time. He's just kind of been one of those guys I've watched with interest for a few years. And I loved what he was doing in the bullpen. And I posted a tweet at some point right near the end of his run in the bullpen noting his last several starts, and it was something just ludicrous. And he was throwing a bunch of innings. And he was doing something that I so wish we saw more of, which is multi-inning shutdown reliever. The Orioles, in a position of dire need, moved him into the rotation, and unsurprisingly, it didn't go great. I am very bullish on Bundy as a reliever and not at all as a starter. Do you have any interest in him as a starter?
Not really. I mean, if he was moved in the rotation somewhere like San Diego, then I would, like deep mixed league kind of guy, you know, hope that he gets some favorable matchups and everything. But AL East down the stretch, I just don't see it. AL only leagues, I would pick him up. And then, you know, maybe I'd find some matchups that I liked with him, or just pick him up because kind of anyone with some potential is worth owning in an AL only league. And if he's in the rotation, he has some potential, but in a mixed league, I'm going to make him prove it before I pick him up. And as you sometimes say, I'm okay with being wrong on an Orioles starter down the stretch of the season and letting someone else take the chance on him.
Absolutely. Now, the one thing I would say is that's not a team that's going to push a guy for that extra out, that extra inning. They'll get him out and they'll go to the bullpen, but that is still not enough for me. I'm downer on nearly everybody on your notes list today, but the one guy I'm not a downer on is Matt Shoemaker. I am buying. I think this guy is really impressive. I don't know exactly where he ranks, but I think it's a fair question, and I think he's a guy I want in on if I'm not already in. How high do you have him ranked for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I think he could be even a number two mixed league starter, definitely a number three. He's someone who's haunted me all year because I narrowly missed out on him in Tout Wars a few weeks ago, you know, in late May when he was really getting hot in the free agent bidding. And then he's just, you know, surged after that, and I've tried to trade for him and couldn't get a deal done, and his value just keeps going up and up and up. But what I'm noticing in some of the shallow leagues, he's still not being added. And I'm getting questions, you know, in the Twitter chat session saying, you know, should I drop Jeff Samardzija or Marcus Stroman or someone like that for Matt Shoemaker? And, like, to me, that answer is, like, absolutely yes. Like, with the way Shoemaker's pitching right now, like, he can't be on waivers in any league. He shouldn't be on the bench in any league.
Yeah, I don't. To me, the answer to that is, why haven't you already? But
yeah, I mean, Shoemaker's had a couple rough starts since he really heated up in May. He's had a couple rough starts. They were against Baltimore and Boston. Like, those are really good lineups. Other than that, like, and his dominant starts have just been so dominant.
And, you know, you talk about context. He pitches in a friendly ballpark. He pitches in a division where even the good lineups can be pitched to. You know, the Mariners can put some runs on the board. The Astros can put some runs on the board. But you can still have good starts against those teams. The only situation that really scares you there is if you go to Texas. And you know, if you want to bench a guy for a start in Texas, okay. But it's a really friendly situation. It's about as friendly a situation as you can have in the American League.
Yeah, I agree. Even, like you said, I feel like Texas is a pretty scary lineup. I mean, they just lost two infielders, so maybe a little less scary, although Fielder wasn't really helping. But I take Texas when they're on the road. I'd still start them. And, yeah, the Astros strike out so often. The A's aren't scary, and they might be even less scary in a few days. And the Mariners haven't been playing well recently. Like, they came out of the gate fine this season, but they haven't been playing well at all recently. Yeah, I feel like I would use Shoemaker. I would probably just blanket statement. I would use him in every start for the rest of the season.
You mentioned a minute ago Samardzija, another guy that I'm sort of perpetually low man on him, so that's not new this year. So you're asking bench or drop. I would not hesitate in a mixed league, at least in a shallower mixed league. I would not hesitate to drop him if there was somebody else I liked. I was more the guy who was like, I'm not sure I'm buying when he was good, and now that he's struggling, I'm out. I'm just not. I've never been a believer. I have never thought, for the most part, with very rare exceptions, your performance has not matched the arm, the hype. Going back to the fact that, honestly, the football thing is part of why the hype he gets. To me, if somebody is interested in him, I will flip him for nearly anything, and in a shallow league, I drop him. I'm just not buying at all.
Yeah, I'm fine with getting off of him too because. We're looking at a long stretch now of generally poor performances. Like, he came out of the gate fine this season, and I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because I do feel like pitching for the Giants is about as favorable of a situation as there is in baseball, like with that home park and Posey behind the plate and a good team and everything. So I was willing to ride it while it was going well, and I wasn't predicting necessarily that it wouldn't work out, but now that I'm seeing it not work out and it's continuing to not work out, this isn't two or three bad starts. Yeah, I'm fine with dropping him in a 10-team league, and in a 12 or a 15-team league, if I could get any player that I really wanted, any player that I could use, I'd be fine with trading him.
Yep, that's exactly where I'm at with him. One last starter before we move on. Aaron Nola had a break, came back, and looked really good. Very encouraging. I'm pretty close to being ready to say I'm back where I was on him 6 weeks ago, are you?
Yeah, I actually started him this week in any league where I owned him. I find I've generally been higher than most people on Nola. I just think he's a really solid pitcher, young pitcher who went through a bit of a rough stretch, and I really applaud the Phillies for giving him that extended break. That seems like, to me, that was just such a sensible thing to do with him, not run him out in Coors right before the All-Star break. Give him that start off, use whoever for that game, let him clear his head, work on his mechanics, whatever he needed to do. You know, maybe just feel fresh. And, yeah, I'm not hesitating until I see two or three poor starts in a row again, he's staying in my lineup.
We move to the hitters, and the first question, I think it's a fair and interesting one because it's frankly one the Astros are asking, is would you rather have Yulieski Gurriel or Alex Bregman from here to the end of the year?
Yeah, I feel like Gurriel is the safe option. He's probably the one I think Gurriel is the one I would rather have. Like, I'll say, admit that out of all the topics on our list for today, this was the one I was most interested to get your take on, because I think there's a chance that both of them are regulars in the Astros lineup by the second half of August. But I think maybe it's more likely Gurriel's a regular with what they paid him and his age. Like, I feel like he needs to contribute with them trying to catch up and get into the postseason.
I think it's much more likely. And I think from a running a major league team perspective, the Gurriel contract, the acquisition, makes total sense. He can be high risk, and if he's even pretty decent, the deal makes sense from a financial running a major league team perspective. With that said, the history, there are more and more data points suggesting that we are not very good at figuring out what we're going to get from guys who have played in the Cuban League. That is just still a little bit of a blind spot. And so on the one hand, I do think that he's going to play. And so in an AL-only league, I am getting on that because I think he's going to play. And I think he's going to be a regular, and I think he could contribute, and he could be very good. But I'm a little skeptical as to – actually, I'm a good bit skeptical as to what he's actually going to be as a major league hitter. With that said, I think this is a pretty clear indication. Look, Bregman could be up in 3 weeks, but I think this is a pretty clear indication that they're not in any hurry to get Bregman on the major league roster. So if I'm drafting for 2017, I'm going Bregman because I like him better as a player and I like his future better. But if we're talking for the remainder of 2016, which in almost all circumstances we are, I'm going Gurriel because I think he will have an opportunity, and I am not at all sold that Bregman will.
Yeah, so I'm guessing if we got a news report, you know, later today that said Bregman and Gurriel, I know this can't happen today, but Bregman and Gurriel were both coming up on the same day, and they were both going into the regular lineup from here on out, you know, say Bregman at third base, Gurriel at DH, and the rest of the players will fit in around them. At that point, you would prefer Bregman, but given you, so your preference for Gurriel is just that you expect him to accumulate a lot more plate appearances the rest of the way.
That's exactly it. If you told me today that Bregman was going to play, I would be all over that. I am excited about him, about his future. I think he's going to hit in the big leagues, but I just don't think he's going to be given the opportunity to hit in the big leagues this year. We stay at third base, and Jake Lamb has been absolutely raking, and I buy it. And I was looking at the minor league numbers, and he's a guy who had high slugging percentages based on doubles, and he gets here, and sometimes doubles turn into homers, and especially when you play in a place like Arizona, sometimes doubles turn into homers. I don't know exactly how high I have him ranked, but I'm buying that this guy is a legitimate power source and not somebody where I'm sort of nervous or where I'm expecting it to fade away. Do you want to talk me down from that, or are you on board too?
No, I'm on board too. Of all the breakouts this season, he's, you know, one of the ones I believe in the most as far as for the rest of this year and going forward. Like you said, he always hit for average in the minors. In the minors, his power was it was there, but not great. But as you said, some doubles, plenty of doubles. And, I mean, you take going to Chase Field, you take just the natural kind of maturation process. Your body fills out a bit. You get a little stronger, you know, in the first half of your 20s and, you know, working out and everything. And I can see just a little more power from him could make a huge difference. And he's just in a great situation hitting, you know, cleanup right behind Paul Goldschmidt, you know, in an Arizona lineup that has been really productive this season. It doesn't have a lot of stars, but they have been pretty productive. So, yeah, of all the breakouts, the guys who kind of went from waiver wire to kind of pretty close to fantasy star, you know, he's one of my favorites this year.
Yeah, there's the list of those guys you offer up, Will Myers, Melvin Upton, Nunez, Segura. The only other guy who is even close to that for me is Myers, and that's, again, because of track record. That's another guy that we expected to hit. And sometimes pitchers come from out of nowhere. Sometimes a pitcher just figures something out, the light comes on, he develops that slightest bit more command or whatever, and sometimes pitchers come out of nowhere. There are very, very few hitters that come out of nowhere. And so a lot of times the first thing I'm going to look at is, what's a guy done before this? Is there reason to believe that these are skills that he actually has, or is this fluky? And so that's why when I look at Myers or when I look at Lamb, the first thing I see is indications from past years that this is something we can buy.
Yeah, I mean, if you looked at, you know, prospect reports on Lamb, say 3 years ago when he was just getting the majors, you would have seen, you know, high average hitter, you know, should be able to hit for average in the majors, maybe not a great power hitter, you know, we'll kind of wait and see. So he, you know, he adds more power than people were expecting, and that really bumps him, you know, from fringe corner infielder in a mixed league to a real stud. And as you said, Myers was considered good all the way through. You know, Melvin Upton, now he's done it before, so yeah. Him coming back and doing it this year after a really long layoff, I guess shouldn't be completely shocking. And with steals being such a hot commodity this season, like, that has given him a lot of value. But he does, with his strikeout rate, kind of toe the line between, you know, being really good because with a homer and a steal and being 0-for-4 with three strikeouts.
We also have a really long stretch of saying that even good Melvin Upton is probably, at his best, is probably a 250, 260 hitter, and he can be pretty good and near the top end of his range and hitting 240. And so he's such a weird guy. He's such a weird guy to sort of figure for fantasy, because it's very much does what he brings. Because the thing about Upton is that even when he varies within a particular profile. Even at his worst, he's going to get a few home runs and a few steals. Even at his best, he's not going to hit for much average. So it's really just a question of, does that profile fit what you need? And if it does, then you should be in on that. And if it doesn't, then him being hot shouldn't really affect it that much for you.
Yeah, I mean, the big difference with him this year so far has been his home run rate is way up. Now, his home run to fly ball rate is way up from what it usually is. So that's surprising and maybe not sustainable. I think if you said before the season started, you know, that Upton was going to hit, 250-ish with 30-something steals this year, I'd say, okay, well, that's surprising, but not shocking. I mean, he can steal bases if the Padres play him every day. They don't have any reason to tell him not to run, so he can hit 250-ish, then I can see all that. It's the fact that he's on pace for, you know, roughly 25 home runs that to me is really surprising. I don't know if he can keep that pace up the rest of the way because that home run to fly ball rate's elevated, and don't pick out like a real reason that it should be.
Yeah, no, I agree there. I think that comes back down some. And so, again, that's just sort of the thing is he is very – it's the weirdest thing for a somewhat inconsistent hitter. He is also very much a known quantity. Ryan Healy, it's just sort of the opposite end, and I should have led into talking about Jake Lamb with Ryan Healy because it would make more sense. This is a guy I am very skeptical on because I don't see that indication that this was there. He had a big year, repeating the Texas League and the PCL this year, but didn't really hit much, didn't even show much power in the Cal League, didn't show much power at Midland. These are places where you should hit, and he didn't really hit much. So to me, this looks like a career year more than a breakout. Now, look, I don't want to overstate this because this is a guy you're picking up on waivers, and he can help you, but I am a little skeptical of even his minor league breakout this year because of the history. I'm sure I'm overanalyzing here because, again, we're not talking about a guy you're giving up a lot to get, but I'm not really all that confident that he's going to give you a lot from here to the end of the year. Do you like him more than I do?
Okay, I'm going to say that I like him more than you do. I didn't think you'd be as pessimistic as you are on him. I think he could be like a deep mixed league guy. I don't think maybe he could be almost Jake. I like how you mentioned Jake Lamb in the beginning. He could be almost like Jake Lamb when he first came up. I mean, not necessarily the splits and everything with lefties and righties, but just kind of decent average, you know, hits a few home runs, but not many. I don't think he's a factor in 10-team leagues. I don't think he's a factor in 12-team leagues. In a 15-team league, though, I could see picking him up. It seems like they're going to put him out there pretty much, as long as he's hitting okay, they'll put him out there pretty much every day the rest of the way. So I could see, you know, I can see in a 15-team league, if he could hit 275 with a few home runs the rest of the way? Do you think that's like a possible expectation for him?
I think it's possible. I wouldn't want to be counting on it, but I think it's possible.
Yeah, and I mean, I felt like one of the things I mentioned in the notes that I think some fantasy owners are jumping off Danny Valencia right now because the A's, I thought, kind of surprisingly moved him to the bench. I feel like he's a guy who just can't catch a break in his career. He keeps hitting, and teams keep pushing him aside. I know he's not the greatest defender, but I would not abandon Valencia right now. I do think there's also a chance that Valencia, either with the A's or another team, finds his way back into a regular role in the next couple weeks. I'd at least give that a couple weeks to see how it all shakes out.
I think there's a very good chance he ends up somewhere else. He can hit and hasn't necessarily endeared himself to clubs in a whole lot of other ways, including defense over the years, but somebody's always willing to take a chance on the bat, so I would not be surprised to see him end up somewhere else. We talked a good bit early in the year and then hadn't in a while about Jason Hayward. It's just not going to happen this year, is it? I mean, we're almost in August now, and he's got 4 home runs, he's got 8 steals, he's hitting .230, he's got 41 runs and 28 RBI. Is this guy a full drop in all leagues right now? Like, do you think you could get something for him in an NL only league? And if so, what would it be?
Yeah, I would say in an NL only league, I'd probably just hold. Even in a 15 team mix, I think I'd just hold. And in those leagues, I just keep playing him and hope that he comes around. I mean, it's possible. You and I were both optimistic on him going into the season, hitting second for the Cubs. Well, he's not hitting second for the Cubs anymore. You know, he's played himself out of that. That being said, he could still do okay. I don't know. I kind of just summarize myself with him as just kind of I give up. Like in a 10-team league, I'd be fine with dropping him if there was someone I really liked on waivers or if I needed the space to stream pitchers or something like that. In a 12-team league, I might try to sell him on just on name value for someone that I liked on a different roster, you know, maybe at a different position of need for me. In a 15-team league or an NL-only league, I think I'd just hold and keep using him because those leagues are so deep, and I'm got to assume his trade value's low enough now that I don't think you'd get anything that great for him. It's just, I don't know, it's really disappointing. I thought, and you thought, that he would be fine. I didn't necessarily think he'd hit 25 home runs this year, but I thought he'd hit 15 home runs, 20 steals, and score 90 runs when they had him in second with his walk rate, and it just isn't happening at all, and this is multiple disappointing seasons in a row with him.
Yeah, I just don't know what I can't look at him and see what happens that I starting him again. He's not running. He's not hitting for power. He has, for the most part, never really been a high average guy, and he's now probably not going to score a lot of runs now that he's not up at the top of the order. I can't. You know, one of the things I often look at is, can I see how this guy helps me? Can I envision the scenario where this goes well? And I'm at the point where I just don't really see what scenario makes Jason Hayward an asset to my team. And so if I have somebody I'd rather have, I'm probably not hesitating to drop. If somebody wants to give me something and take a flyer on him, I'm probably taking nearly anything. I can't envision that sequence of events where I want him starting regularly. And that's, you know, compared to somebody we talked about earlier in the year, Justin Upton, who still hasn't really put it together. But I can absolutely see the scenario where I traded Justin Upton and wish I hadn't. I'm going to have a hard time seeing where Jason Hayward is not on my roster in a month and I wish he were.
Yeah, so if you benched Hayward and he had, let's say this week he has a 2-homer, 2-steal week, do you feel like you'd put him right back into your lineup? Or if you drop him and no one scooped him right up in a shallower league and he had a 2-homer, 2-steal week, cause that's kind of him when he's going well, that 5-category contributor. Like, would you scoop him right back up, or would you say, I'm not buying it again?
No, not on a week. Not on a week. The thing is, if I dropped him or even benched him, I'll put it this way, if I dropped him in a shallow league, it is almost certain that he would be hot for long enough for somebody else to pick him up before I would. I'm just not seeing it.
Yeah, I agree. When I feel like I'm done with him, you know, I'm trying to remind myself now to just not, I'm convincing myself, you know, not to buy in to my own hype or anyone else's hype on him. Like next year I'm setting myself as a cap when I rank him at, you know, a dozen homers and 15 steals or something like that. And I'm not going above that. I'm not going to get sucked into projecting, you know, 17 homers and 22 steals or something for him. Again, I'm just not going to do it until I see it from him.
We move on to the closers, and Boston has gone from very clear to we don't really know when they brought in Brad Ziegler to it looks like we know because they announced it was going to be Uehara to it looks like we know when it's going to be Brad Ziegler. We both were kind of down on Ziegler a week ago, but now he's pretty clearly going to be the guy at least for a while. Do you want him now that he's going to be the guy at least for a while, or are you know, still figuring that somebody's going to be back soon enough that he's not really worth holding?
No, I would pick him up, like, in any league where he's been dropped. And I'll say this, if an owner drops Ziegler, like, don't feel bad about it. Like, it wasn't a foolish move. You can't predict. I know Uehara is injury-prone, but you can't predict that a closer is going to go down in such a short – like, he was only being asked to hold the role for, like, a month. Like, you can't really predict in such a short time frame that someone's going to get hurt. If you dropped Ziegler and you lost him, like, it wasn't a silly move, but – if he's sitting out there on waivers in a league, yeah, for sure, I would pick him up. Like, Boston's a quality team that could generate plenty of save chances for him. We know the strikeout rate won't be great, but he gets a lot of ground balls. He could be fine holding that role for 3 or 4 weeks until Kimbrel gets back. Yeah, I'd be happy to pick him up. I wouldn't trade a lot for him or anything. I don't think he's going to be amazing, but his save chances are so fickle. I mean, there's no reason that he can't get as many saves as other closers in the next 3 or 4 weeks or more.
Do you have any interest in stashing Joe Kelly?
No. Do you? Do you see that him like ascending all the way to the ninth inning in a short amount of time before Kimbrel gets back?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the problem is that one of those guys is probably going to get back. I just have had this. It's a running joke between me and our Red Sox beat reporter. My expectation that Joe Kelly one day is going to be a really really good reliever, but. I really thought that he'd be the move when they DL'd Uehara. So when he will, it's probably not going to happen for him right now, which is kind of a bummer because, again, I think Kelly's going to be a really good reliever, but I think this makes it clear it's not now. The Braves situation is getting kind of interesting. I was very skeptical on Mauricio Cabrera at first, but you watch game to game and I don't want to overstate it because it's still only a few innings, but it looks like he is starting to turn ridiculous tools into performance, and it's awfully hard not to be intrigued by 103 miles an hour. Is Cabrera starting to catch your attention?
Yeah, he is, especially with Jim Johnson having just blown a save, and I think there's a decent chance that the Braves will unload Johnson by the trade deadline. That being said, like, Johnson was on a nice little run, and I thought, okay, well, here's someone who could pick up 3 or 4 saves maybe in the last couple weeks of July, and then he's gone off to a contender. But I'm not sure if the contenders will be rushing out to get Johnson. I mean, the Dodgers picked him up last year, and it didn't work out at all for them, you know, down the stretch. So, but I do think there's a decent chance Johnson's on another team by August 1st, and then Cabrera could have a stretch where he closes, or maybe they kind of go with a committee, but maybe he gets the most chances. That being said, Aroldis Toscano is going to be back. I mean, this is a really weird situation where an injury, I think, has elevated the fantasy value of an injured player because Toscano was one of the most popular trade targets among relievers right before he was injured. Now there's a good chance that he won't be traded this season, which means by the middle of August he could be back as the Braves closer. So I feel like it's kind of like it's different but a little similar to the Joe Kelly thing where Cabrera may not take over closing duties until August, and then it might have a really short stretch where there's just not enough time frame there before the actual closer gets back. And then it would for sure be Vizcaíno. Again, I can't see how it won't be.
Right. No, I think that makes sense. We move on to injuries, and probably a lot of people would say that we've buried the lead here because we might should have talked about this guy during starting pitchers, but the news on Clayton Kershaw went from, that's a little discouraging to, oh, that's very worrisome. I mean, there's nothing you really can do but hold with Kershaw. But, I mean, What are you thinking if you've got him? What are you doing to cover that absence? What if you have Kershaw and you are suddenly faced with the possibility of not getting another start from him this year, what do you do?
Yeah, I am seeing questions on Twitter with owners saying, can I trade Clayton Kershaw for kind of generally okay pitcher X? You know, can I trade Kershaw for Marco Estrada? Can I trade him for Drew Pomeranz? You know, those kinds of pitchers. Can I trade him for Gerrit Cole? Like, these pitchers who are not aces by any stretch, but are okay and are in the rotation right now. And in some situations, that might make sense because we just have no idea what's going to happen with them. And maybe that's why we didn't leave with them, because we don't know. Like, I guess you just hold and wait. But the one option is that you find an owner in the middle of the pack in your league who needs to make a splash and say, do you want to take Kershaw? You know, without a doubt, the best pitcher in fantasy when he's healthy, and you give me kind of your number two type starter. You know, if you were a Kershaw owner, wouldn't you be happy to unload him for especially like a Lester, like a Danny Salazar? I mean, I don't even think you could get that much for him right now.
Oh, I'd be thrilled to get one of those guys. I'd do that in an instant. Yeah, I think that's a good way to think. If somebody is willing to do that, you at least have to listen. You at least have to do the math and say, back injuries are scary. He is not currently throwing at all. So even, you know, at this point, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, he's not going to be back in a week. I mean, this is not something where he's going to go out, throw another bullpen, and then start a game. So as, you know, some that sort of injury math that we talked about a few weeks ago, as the season gets shorter, as we're down to, I think, 10 weeks left in the regular season, I think that you have to start thinking about, well, okay, let's say, even optimistically, let's say 6 weeks of Clayton Kershaw versus 10 weeks of another starting pitcher. And with the acknowledgement that 6 weeks could be zero, I think you have to listen if somebody's interested in doing that.
Yeah, I mean, we're basically talking about 50 cents on the dollar, and I think I would take, say, 10 weeks of Marco Estrada over the possibility. I mean, at the high end, maybe 7 weeks of Kershaw, and at the low end, as you said, maybe zero. If I was doing well in my league and I needed to hold those ratios, to kind of hold that pitcher spot, because now I've got a hole in my lineup. I mean, some staff might be deep enough to wait for them. And, you know, I think this whole thing is a good reminder for all of us that when you're dealing with injured players, you have to be careful not to get too optimistic. I mean, just a week ago, we were talking about getting the good news on Kershaw that he was throwing, right, and us talking about whether he was still the number one fantasy starter or not. And now it's just taken, you know, one bad news story and we're dropping him behind, say, 30 more starters. And in general, I think, and I'm guilty of this often too, getting just too optimistic that the recovery timetable for injured players will be really smooth. And whether it's the Tommy John guys who are often delayed, or just players in general, it's hard for them sometimes to meet their timetables. I continually see with the injury report on our site, the timetable is getting pushed back and pushed back for guys out with injury.
It reminds me a little bit of something somebody once said to me a very long time ago, and this is going to reveal a lot of things about how old I am, but when I used to go to the record store in the pre-internet days and ask, when is so-and-so's new album coming out? I heard July 24th and I heard August 2nd, and the clerk said, always assume it's the later date. If you have heard multiple dates, always assume it's the later date. That's probably not a bad advice when it comes to injuries as well.
Yeah, or even just to build in, if you get a date on a guy, I say J.D. Martinez is a good example. You know, they kind of said late July when he started, you know, when he initially hurt his elbow. Well, I think it was more like late July he's playing baseball again, not late July he's playing baseball.
That's a really good point, because if you're talking about 3 days, 3 days is 3 days. But I think that's, before we move on, I do think that's a really good point to drive in, is to listen to the language that they use, because there is a difference between the recovery time from an injury being 4 weeks and the time being back playing major league games is 4 weeks, because it's hard to play major league games. And there are some injuries where 4 weeks is when you're healthy again, and then you have to start playing baseball again. So I think it's just a good thing to remember in general, is read the language, read the words they use, and don't just assume that when you read 6 weeks, that means 6 weeks from today a guy is going to play in major league games. We move to the two-start pitchers, and for once there is one guy who just stands out clearly from the field for me. A couple of those I like a bit, but Patrick Corbin, Wei-Yin Chen, Chase Anderson, Michael Pineda, Jeremy Hellickson,
Ervin Santana and Jake Peavy. The guy to me that stands out easily from that is Hellickson in Miami and Atlanta. One of those is a friendly ballpark. One is a friendly matchup, and I like that pitcher a lot right now. The one concern is that he could be starting for somebody else by that time, and it is possible that those matchups could be something very different. I think that's something to be aware of, but assuming he stays there, I like the pitcher and I like the matchup. Probably like Santana second best from that list. Who else do you like on that list?
Yeah, Santana was my number one. Just he's been pitching well, and those are home starts against two teams that are weak against righties. Pineda's a boomer bust, but I think I would use him. You know, Houston strikes out. He gets Houston first. They strike out a lot. And then he gets a Rays team that's much better against lefties than righties. And I would take Jake Peavy. I went back and looked, and, you know, he's been up and down this year, and kind of, I feel like kind of in general since he's been with the Giants. But one thing about Peavy that's been pretty consistent is since he's been with the Giants, he's pitched well at home and poorly on the road, and he's at home twice next week. So I think I would use him in a lot of leagues.
I think that makes a lot of sense. That's Fantasy 411 for this week. We will be bearing down on the Major League trade deadline when we talk next week, and we'll have a lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of what-have-yous. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking some time to talk.